I want to just share three things before we go on. And the first has to do with energy. We have had a week full of brilliant energy in this place. I'll say yesterday, when we stood in East Baltimore and worked on the gardens that were helping to create with people from Day Spring, when we blessed the earth with water and with our hands, and when we stood with one another and said that even a place that seems so asset deprived, so needy, that we saw power and strength, beauty, and possibility with one another. We also last night in this room filled the room with the beautiful music of Plymouth Revolution and had a chance with people from all of the Jewish congregations of Maryland to think about how we behave in, during the General Assembly down in Annapolis later in the year, to think about the victories of one another and the possibilities of what stands left before us. And then here we are today, and you'll be hearing a new addition to our music ministry with the brilliant contribution from Monica Reiner, which will be happening later. When it comes time for her to sing one of the songs, you want to look at the back of the Transgender Day Remembrance flyer to see the lyrics to one of the songs that she'll be singing with us. It's also, we have this remarkable situation in this church with the number of seminarians who are part of our congregation, and so you'll be hearing from one of them today. It's a rich, brilliant, wonderful time with beautiful energy. There's also sadness, and we want to call our attention to continue to be with Avani and her family, with Kayla and Cassandra, as Avani's continuing rehab. And then a sad note from the hospital, Valerie McNeil had a slight stroke yesterday. She called and was told she's at University Hospital, so not Illinois, but University of Maryland Hospital. And she's asking that we pay attention, especially to Alan. So I'm hoping the people in the Southwest Parents Group will continue to help us reach out and then be connected. We will sign a card for the members meeting this afternoon, the members hearing this afternoon, and have a chance to all be able to hear. It's a beautiful day here, and this is a place where we bring our joy and we bring our sorrow.
Hannah Rollins is a member of the First Unitarian Church of Baltimore. Hannah is in her second year as an Urban Fellow and Masters of Divinity student at Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C., and she is pursuing ordination to UU ministry. As a lifelong UU, Hannah has been on a number of committees, though few have been as much fun, she says, as First Unitarian's Religious Education with Children and Youth Committee. She lives in the Better Waverly neighborhood in Baltimore City with her partner Catherine and their cat Schweinsteiger.
Thank you, Pat. I invite you all to remain seated and open the gray hymnal to reading number 609. I will lead this half of the congregation in the upstanding text, and Pat will lead that half in the italics. I invite you to, as you wish, to substitute your own language for the divine in the first line if you're over here with me on this side. To worship God is nothing other than to serve the people. All people are members of the same body, created from one essence. The others cannot stay at rest.
We are here because we are people of faith. Within each of us lives the conviction of a saving faith that could restore our broken planet and illuminate the lives of our sisters and brothers. Ancient wisdom teaches that we who would save the world must first save ourselves. We who would restore the planet must learn to restore the broken structures of the institutions closest at hand, to illuminate the lives of our companions and friends. To this end, let us center ourselves, acknowledging the trouble of mind and vexation of spirit that accompany us, even here. Let us open ourselves to that creative mystery which is at work in our striving, whose servants we are and seek to be.
I think that if you asked most Unitarian Universalists on any given day, do you think that the end of the world is near? That we need to be saved from imminent destruction? Most of us, and even most of the people here in the United States, would give you a resounding no. But I think that if you asked the same question on the Wednesday after Election Day, you might get a different response. And I'm not just talking about this past week's results. Both sides of the political aisle are guilty of proclaiming imminent doom when an election swings heavily in one direction or the other. It happens so often that I'm sure Canada has grown tired of disenchanted U.S. citizens' empty promises to grow the Canadian tax base in the weeks after every election. And as I sit through all of these endless election cycles, I begin to wonder, why? Why is it that when we think the world is heading in a direction we don't like, we suddenly feel compelled to throw up our hands and proclaim that the world is going to the dogs and that there's nothing more we can do? How is it that we go from feeling so hopeful to so discouraged? How is it that we go from being convinced that we can change the world to thinking that there is no way to save the world? These days, it's pretty easy to look at the world and declare that it is falling apart. Our 24-hour news cycle gives us a never-ending supply of brokenness to see. Sectarian violence overseas, police brutality in our streets, abuse of the vulnerable in our own homes. Now, our Unitarian Universalist faith calls us, like Melvin the Vanquisher and his daughter Elizabeth, to make the world a better place. But that's hard. It's especially hard when you believe that every person has inherent worth and dignity. That can be hard to square with the reality of the evil that we see around us in our world every day. So what do we do? What do we say? This morning's words from UU Minister Kendall R. Gibbons speak to the difficulty we face as a faith community, engaged with the wider world. We're faced with the question, where do we begin? With the world or with ourselves? Should we, as Jesus urges in the Christian Gospel of Matthew, take the log out of our own eye before we remove the speck of dust from our neighbor's eye. Should we heed Michael Jackson's timeless advice and begin with the man in the mirror? That's pretty easy advice, to start with your own problems before you deal with the problems in the wider world. How many times have we heard that those of us who live in glass houses should probably not throw stones? And there is some logic to this notion that we should do the work with ourselves before we do it in the world. I think about our country's political discourse, such as it is, and I wonder if this injunction to look first at our own foibles and wrongdoing might bring about some more civility. On the other hand, I wonder about who would be left out. Who would be left to do the work of advocacy and justice if we only let perfect people do the work of advocacy and justice? I know I would be ruled out. Maybe you would be too. Maybe not, but so often I feel like there are insurmountable problems out in the world, and I don't really know that much about them. I'm no expert, and I had probably just better let the experts handle it. But then I consider Kendall Gibbons' further elaboration on the ancient Hebrew notion that to save the world, we must save ourselves. He says, "We who would restore the planet must learn to restore the broken structures of the institutions closest to hand, to illuminate the lives of our companions and friends." Well, that's a bit different from simply beginning with ourselves as individuals. He is suggesting that we have to begin with our own social location. That's harder. This means that I cannot simply refuse to comment about dialogues regarding race or class because I'm white or because I have economic means, or that I can stay silent on police brutality just because I haven't been a victim of it myself. I need to illuminate the lives of my companions and friends, just like Melvin and Elizabeth. I need to consider not just that I am a person who has certain privileges, but rather I need to think about the structures that gave me those privileges in the first place. When that seems like too daunting of a task, I think about the stories that remind me of people like Emma Sulkowitz. Currently a senior at Columbia University, she accused a fellow student of sexually assaulting her in her dormitory. The judicial process used by Columbia University cleared her assailant's name, and he continues to attend school with Emma. As part of her senior thesis, Emma is doing a project called Carry That Weight. In the performance protest, Emma carries a mattress, just like the ones that everyone sleeps on in the dorms at Columbia. And she carries that mattress as a symbol of the pain and shame that come with assault. And she carries it with her everywhere she goes on campus. And she cannot ask for help. But she does accept help. As a result, there have been a number of collective carries. And a collective carry simply means that a group of students meets her at a specific place and time, and then each of them lends a hand and they carry her burden together. These collective carries are a visible demonstration of those students' commitments to showing at Columbia University what they value. Their commitment to shaping the institution closest to their hands and to illuminate their friend's life. And it seems like such a simple act, helping a friend carry a mattress. How many times have we all carried a mattress or a couch or boxes when helping a friend move into a new home or apartment? It's such a common experience, lending that helping hand. But in the case of Emma Sulkowitz's supporters, it's a radical act. It is a living, tangible demonstration of a commitment to stand with a woman who has been marginalized. It illuminates the life of someone whose experience of assault could have left her alone and in the dark, like it does for so many people. And then thinking about this morning's reading makes me wonder whether every person whose hand touches that mattress is perfect. Whether all of them are totally right with the world, do no wrong, and are totally saved from the kind of brokenness that so many of us feel. My guess is that they're not perfect. And that this group of imperfect people, instead of being discouraged and defeated and downhearted by the seemingly insurmountable huge problem of sexual assault on college campuses, these people decided to take a stand simply by reaching out their hand and saying, "Your burden looks heavy. What can I do to help you carry it?" It makes me think of the words from one of the verses from this morning's hymn. "Wake now, my conscience, with justice thy guide. Join with all people whose rights get denied. Take not for granted a privileged place. God's love embraces the whole human race." It's hard and uncomfortable a lot of the times to turn a critical eye on ourselves and see what privileges we have been taking for granted, and to see where we still need to join with people whose rights get denied. And so as you go forward this week, and at the end of every legislative session or election that might not go your way, or every time you get frustrated that the people in power don't reflect your values, I pray that you turn back here to our shared faith and our shared values. I pray that rather than throwing up our hands and declaring that the world is beyond saving, so we might as well not even try, we turn to the people and institutions closest to us and ask, whose burden is too heavy? That we ask, where can I bring light and love? That we ask simply, what can I do? And as we acknowledge the vexation and anxiety that we experience as we live in a world that is broken in lots of places, that we take heart because the power to save it lives in us and among us here today. The power to save the world comes from acts as simple as lending a listening ear or a helping hand to lift a mattress, as simple as seeing another person's burden and offering to ease it. Friends, I know that we can do this transformative and saving work. I know that together, as people of faith, we can do better than throwing up our hands and saying that the world is beyond repair. Together, small act by small act, hand by hand, ear by ear, we can save the world. I invite you into a place of prayer and meditation with me. Spirit of life, we are living in a world that is sometimes broken. But through it all, we know that the divine is present, even in the most tempestuous storm, the deepest darkness, in prison cells, in dungeons vile, you are with us. We know that through the storm, we have hope because we have one another. Here today, we are not alone. And we know that as we work to serve the purpose of the divine in our lives and in the lives of the world, we know that there is the possibility for the human spirit to sing boldly and proudly of love. And we know that when we work for a world where our friends and our family no longer know shame, no longer know oppression, that is when our spirits sing. May it be so. Amen.
Faith is a dangerous thing. It is not something we can touch or wear or eat or speak upon. But our faith in community, the community we share here and in the larger one we are called to create, that faith, made tangible in our monetary contribution, can provide food and clothing and shelter, both to our church's staff members, whom we are committed to support, and to the people in need, whom we are called to help. Our Change for Change partner during November and December is the Friends of Day Spring Gardens, a grassroots project transforming desolate and weed-filled vacant lots into an oasis where vegetables, herbs, trees, and native plants can flourish. Growing food is a top priority, as this area is part of the food desert in East Baltimore. Friends of Day Spring Gardens is a collaboration of the families and staff of Day Spring, community residents, and members of the First Unitarian Church. More information is available at the Social Action Clearinghouse table during coffee hour. I invite you to please give generously as our ushers gratefully accept the offering.
pleased to welcome our visitors as well. In order to get to know you better, I'd like to invite all visitors who care to introduce themselves to please stand at this time. Oh, I know you have a few because I've spoken to them. Thank you. Tell us your name and where you're from, and Usher will bring you the microphone so that you can be heard.
The thing that's kind of interesting, I had a conversation with one of the families yesterday. someone's hand, and then have just a few more good words from Hannah to send us out.
Friends, as we go forward from this place today, remember that you are not alone. When you return here, whether physically on Sunday morning or in your heart or in your spirit, here you find people with whom you can do the good work, can do the work of community, of love, of compassion. Here you find people so that when you feel drip, drip, slow drip of change, it doesn't feel quite so slow among friends. We extinguish this flame in the chalice, but may its fire burn bright in your heart as you go forth and do the work of the world.
Bless you.
Right, I invite you to amazing and grab your great hymnal and open to number 108. This old